And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 747. Continuing our team by team previews to get you ready for the 2025 fantasy baseball season. And it's the team we finally had to talk about. They wear blue, which is my favorite color, ironically. They spend all of the money you can find in the world, and they do it in interesting ways, is the nicest way I'll say it. And they're successful at what they do. I'm trying to be nice because I like a lot of the players, unfortunately. In order to help me break down the Los Angeles Dodgers is a good friend of mine, a good friend of the show. I look forward to hanging out with him every November in Arizona. Now we get to do this show and hopefully catch up more throughout the season. He's a great source behind the scenes for Pitcher List, more than you see in front of the scenes there. He's basically Nick's right-hand man, folks. So check all that out. He's on Twitter at Miles Nelson, PL. Miles Nelson, how you doing, my friend?
I'm doing fantastic. I'm so happy to be back doing this Dodgers preview again with you. It's funny because I feel like 1 year ago, you had pretty much the exact same intro. Like you easily could have just copied and pasted everything you said last year, because it's true. We did the same thing again, spending money in interesting, unique ways. The rest of the league, I feel like, has caught up a little bit to our ways. I don't think I've seen a tweet about a signing go out on any team that didn't include the word deferral in it somewhere. Everyone's deferring money now. It's the new hot thing. Dodgers obviously started that trend by deferring $800 billion last year. And we're still doing it. So, happy to be here again. Always happy to talk to you, Bubba. I'll talk to you about baseball any time of the year, especially if the Dodgers are playing the Giants. Yeah, man, love being on the pod.
Yep. Always great to have you. Before we get started, if you want to, you know, pump anything up for Pitcher List, you guys are always up to something. I know we're recording on Thursday. It'll come out a couple days later, but Nate Schwartz just run baseball research article of the year for Process Plus. You know, him and our buddy Kyle Bland, who has been on the show talking about that, has a big brain part of that. Anything else you want to pump over there? Because there's like a million things always going on at Pitcher List.
Yeah, and honestly, you touched on the biggest one, which is, you know, the big brains that we now have, you know, really doing a lot of great work. I think when we spoke at this time last year, Kyle Bland had started to scratch at the surface of a lot of the things that he has now really brought to fruition with Process Plus, with all of the hitter metric side of PLV, and stuff that Nate Schwartz, who's one of our best writers from, you know, any player deep dive that Nate does, like, I have to read, because he does such a great job with the research, and is a great writer. But he's also done a great job of taking all of those, like, really, like, smart genius kind of, you know, nuances that Kyle understands, and Nate can take that and put it in a way that folks like you and I can understand. Not that we're not smart, but Kyle's a robot, right? And so for Nate to take those ones and zeros and turn them into actual words, you know, it's no small feat. The other thing I just was going to mention, obviously, as baseball season is right around the corner, people are starting to draft. We have a plethora of draft tools to help you with your draft this, you know, this season, whether it is our free, you know, resources, our draft kit, you know, Nick's rankings, Scott Chu's hitter rankings, Rick Graham's relief pitcher rankings, and all of the different articles we're going to have coming out, breaking down the positions, breaking down sleepers and busts, prospects, everything you might need to know. But we also have our fantastic PL Pro tools. So if you're a PL Pro member, we have a ton of metrics, unique data, stuff that is 100%, you know, PLV driven. You know, we have our own projections powered by PLV, which again is that really smart thing that Kyle put together. That was a horrible way of prefacing it, but it's all powered by a lot of the great analytics work that Kyle Bland has done over the past year. So if you want to take your game to the next level and get, you know, information that no one else has, the PL Pro resources that we have, and then also getting direct access to our staff and getting direct access, like, into Nick's brain, essentially, are ways to really set yourself apart from everyone else, in draft season. So, I'll leave it at that. I don't have anything of my own to plug, because as you mentioned, I'm behind the scenes. I'm just here helping everyone else do all the amazing things they do. So come be part of the Pitcher List community and be part of everything that we're doing.
Yep, always good stuff. Love supporting the crew over there. And love. I'm going to have to get Nate on the show. I've had Kyle on quite a few times. Got to get Nate on and pick his brain now for sure. All right, let's do it. Let's do it. Like I said, it stinks because when I was younger, you probably weren't even born yet, the Giants-Dodgers was like a rivalry, like because these guys played on the same team forever. So they actually hated each other. Like Lasorda would get booed and all these things. Mm-hmm. Now it's like free agency changes a lot of that. I think I said it last year with you is I like most of the guys we're going to talk about. It's hard for me to hate them. We're like when I grew up, I hated Kirk Gibson. Like I hated these guys on the Dodgers. That was just life. Yep. This has changed. So before we get to the players discussion, what are your thoughts on how 2024 went? I ask every team this. You're the one that gets to go excellent.
You know, it's yes, excellent. 100% excellent. It is really, I mean, I don't know how to put into words. Like a lot of people, fans of other teams are going to look at what the Dodgers have done over the past 10 years and be like, you know, we won in 2020. We've been there in 17-18. You know, we had chances. We choked them in 21 through 23. We've had a lot of sustained success, but we never really got over the hump in the way that like a team of this caliber that spends the amount that we spend should have. And so 2024 was actually just a really rewarding experience from that. Like, I'm not going to sit here and act like it was anything close to like watching a team go through a rebuilding process or, you know, something like what the Cubs went through in 2016 and getting that curse, you know, lifted. But to see a team that has been there so often and has fallen short so often, you know, really get over a lot of their own, get out of their own way, if really more than anything else, and just show up in October and play the brand of baseball that, you know, we know they can, for it to happen the way that it did with Freddie Freeman's home run in game one. It was definitely a really magical experience. And I'll tell you something, game five was when I was driving to Arizona. And I knew that I was risking, like, I was literally sitting there going like, how early can I cut out of work to get to Arizona in time to try to like not miss the whole game or have to listen to it on the radio or, you know, stream a radio source from my phone or something like that. I was literally pulling into the first sports bar I could on the west end of Phoenix when Walker Buehler struck out Alex Verdugo to end the world. Like literally I was parking and I was like, I was 2 minutes away from actually being able to be inside and sell it. Well, celebrate with all these probably Diamondbacks fans who probably would have hated seeing us win. So probably good that I was in my car, but it definitely was a magical experience, something I'll never forget. And I hope the Dodgers can continue to sustain that level of success. Obviously I hope we win five more, but it was a great year. It was a great year.
Let's say they're setting themselves up well to sustain success. Let's just put it that way. Like,
yeah,
that's the beautiful thing about baseball. There's a lot of factors in it, but you definitely have the best roster to accomplish these things. So let's get at it. For those keeping track at home using NFBCOC 12-team ADP, that's just for reference sake, because I just want to get Miles' thoughts on these players, because most of them, like we joked before the show, is, oh, they're really good. You should draft them. Yes, that's what they did here. Well, there's some caveats, and we'll start with Shohei. And obviously, Shohei had the shoulder injury that kind of derailed his World Series. Still Shohei, but not what he was in the first two rounds where he crushed everything and all season. You mentioned 50-50. So he had the surgery. They showed him even sliding now with like teaching how to slide not head first, all those things. He's also trying to come back to pitch, which could take away some things. So where are you at on Shohei, I guess, from a fantasy standpoint? Because I think we all agree he's still like the best player in baseball.
Yeah, and obviously that claim will be even more legitimate once he's on the mound and pitching, because then, you know, there's just nobody that can touch that value. Obviously, you're not expecting last year again from Ohtani. I hate to tell you this, but I don't think he's going to do 50-50 again. Probably not for the rest of his career. That was a once-in-a-lifetime season, I think, and I don't think we're going to see that again from Ohtani. I could be wrong, but I just don't think so. I think with everything that he has sort of that he's working with now. Last year, he could focus just on hitting, right? He was shut down from throwing, wasn't, you know, doing bullpens. There was no other distractions. This year, even in April, when he's not going to be on the mound in a game setting, he's still going to be throwing bullpens. He's still going to be ramping up as a pitcher. He's going to be focused on that. There's going to be much more risk management from, you know, how much are they going to let him run? I do think they're going to still let him run. I think one of the things, one of the reasons, you know, why Ohtani chose the Dodgers, and I'm sure every team offered him the same thing, but it was like, we're going to let you be Shohei until proven otherwise, until it becomes an issue, we're going to let you do your thing. But I do think that means instead of running 60 times in a season, that might mean, you know, he's running 30 times. I think instead of playing 159 games, you know, at the plate, he might take some days off here and there, especially if it's a day that a bullpen lines up. He may just take that day off. I think this is all to say he's still the number one pick. Mm-hmm. I don't think you can justify. I think you wouldn't be able to live with yourself if you picked anyone else. And then Ohtani went out and had the kind of season he's had now 4 years in a row. But I think we're going to see a step back from last year. I think we're going to see something closer to what he was doing in his MVP seasons in with the Angels, 40 home runs, 25 stolen bases, you know, 200 runs and RBIs combined, and a good batting average. So that's the number one pick, 10 times out of 10. But, you know, if you want to be that one guy that, you know, says, oh, he's utility only or something like that, or, you know, oh, I'm worried that, you know, about an injury risk or something, go for it. Sure. But I think you're going to see another top season, maybe top three season in terms of overall value at the end of the year.
Yeah. Ryan keeps telling me that as well. And I keep saying I want Bobby Witt first, but I get it. I get it. Ohtani's awesome. Like, I'm not, it's not shade on Ohtani. I'm more to like some of the first comments you made there is he's trying to get back to being a pitcher. And so what does that impact have on his hitting? And it might have absolutely none. Like, there's that real world that it doesn't, because we've seen him do it just fine, but we've also seen hiccups at times. That's my only thing. So again, I'm just, it's me. I'm not going to argue anybody taking him number one ever, but I think the dude's amazing. And as a baseball fan, I hope we see him play every single game.
Yeah. And I get it. I get the Bobby Witt, like why you'd want Bobby Witt first. I've seen Aaron Judge go first and that I'm like, I don't sure. Maybe I guess, but at that point I'd rather just take Shohei. If you're going to make that choice, but I think as a hitter, it's, you know, there's a conversation. We can have a conversation about Witt. I think if you're playing in a league like ESPN and you're playing in a daily league, then there's no competition because you get both weekly leagues or leagues where you're only getting the hitter. Sure, you can pick Witt, and I won't. No one's gonna blame you for it. But yeah, that's the only world I think. If you have the chance to have Ohtani both as in both his hitting and his pitching without having to sacrifice week in and week out like you do in an NFBC league, then you're taking Ohtani first, and this isn't even a conversation anymore.
And to be fair, I have not had the first pick in any draft yet, so I've never that problem. All right, let's talk about Mookie Betts. Mookie Betts has an ADP of around 12 right now. He's going to be shortstop again, probably this year. Eligible in the outfield as well for fantasy. Almost got second base. Might have it if you're in Yahoo and everything.
He does have it in Yahoo for whatever that's worth. For whatever Yahoos you have listening to your podcast.
Yeah, there's plenty of them, trust me. So we know who Mookie is, but last year did have a dip in the power department. He missed a lot of games because of the wrist injury. Where are we at on Mookie this season? Because out of all the Dodgers, like, he's steady as it is, but he's getting older, and I don't think people like pay attention to that age as much as other players.
Yeah, he's gonna be 32. I don't think age is a concern. Obviously the wrist injury played into that lack of power last year. We see that all the time, right? You've got an arm injury. It's going to sap power from hitters. But he was still a very productive player, still has the great approach, still, you know, has the great contact skills and great eye at the plate. I'm not concerned about Mookie. I do think he is, like, if we're talking about tiers at shortstop, you know, Witt and De La Cruz are head and shoulders above him. And then, you know, with Gunner, there's probably head and shoulders above Mookie, but there's more of like a ceiling floor conversation there. Mookie is as steady as they come. He gives you some positional flexibility. You're probably playing him at shortstop, but five outfielder leagues on Yahoo where he's second base, like, you know, that positional flexibility can be valuable. I'm not reading too much into anything with Mookie. I expect to see something like what we saw from him in 22 and 23 with the Dodgers, 30 plus home runs, 10 stolen bases and great production elsewhere.
For sure. Now I'm curious to get your thoughts on Freddie Freeman, because Freeman had a great year, obviously hit the Grand Slam, heard around the world, but he had the ankle injury. He had to have surgery, made his spring debut on Thursday, but they also came out and said he's going to be getting treatment through the All-Star break, and he won't likely play day games after night games. So it's a minuscule thought, but if you're talking about like a first round, early second round pick, you start knocking off 10 games playing time from the stats, that does accumulate somewhere. So where are you, or what are you thinking about Freddie this year? Because eventually he's going to be healthy, barring something crazy. But it's, they are telling us the ankle's not 100% in theory.
Right. And I mean, so there's two sides of that coin too. We saw in the postseason that the ankle injury didn't hinder his ability at the plate. Now, did it hinder his ability to run like a normal human being? Sure. He could not run. He could not move. And the DH spot is not available for the Dodgers. So it's not even a situation where they can manage his injury by putting him at the DH spot. That's one of the very, very minuscule downsides of having Shohei Ohtani. So there is that to manage and to monitor. If you want to knock him down below some of the other first basemen at the position because of that, right? Vlad, Harper, I think that's already where he is in ADP. Totally understandable there. You know, we're talking about a second rounder here. And I think when you have someone as consistent and as reliable as Freddie, even if it's in 140 games instead of 160, like he's used to, I'll dock him those points in terms of what I see out of his projections, out of his production, but I'm not going to like think that it's going to affect his ability or that he's going to take a step back because of it. He may run less, you know, he's a guy who usually is good for 10 stolen bases. He might only steal once this year. But he's also, I mean, he's kind of picky and choosy about his stolen bases. He usually gets a good jump. So I want to, let me look at who else is going around him, not just first baseman, because that may sort of impact my thinking. But you're talking about, I mean, in NFBC, like William Contreras is going right after him. Like I'm not taking William Contreras above Freddie Freeman personally. So I think he's in the right range.
Yeah, it's like Michael Harris, Freddie Freeman, or Freddie Freeman, William Contreras, those kind of guys. So yeah.
Yeah. Ronald Acuna Jr. is an interesting one there. Like, you know, Jackson Merrill, if you want to have, you know, more of like a ceiling play, if you think Trey Turner is going to bounce back, like I think this is less of a question about your belief in Freddie Freeman as a, you, the listener, as a manager, you should believe in Freddie Freeman. It's more so, what do you want in the second round of your draft, right? Do you want to go higher upside than Freeman? Then absolutely, like no qualms there. But I think it's safe to say we know what we're going to get from Freeman, you know, and maybe it's in 20 fewer games than we expect, but I don't think it's going to be more than that.
Yep. No, that's fair. That's why it's just that news drop today. I'm like, it's interesting. So I'm at least put in the back of the brain to kind of see how that plays out.
Yeah. If he played worse in October because of it, then we have a different conversation.
Which is fair.
But it was a matter of availability. It was a matter of being able to play defense. It was not a matter of what he did at the plate.
True. Teoscar Hernandez returns to LA after a monster season. He won the home run derby and he hit 33 home runs, drove in 99, hit 272. He's been great his entire career outside of like one hiccup, essentially. He struggled batting average wise in Seattle, which happens, of course, but overall, yeah, he's been really solid. Yeah, ADP's 52. I love Teoscar. I don't have a ton more to say, but what do you have on Teoscar Hernandez?
Everything that we saw from him last year, you can copy and paste it and expect it again this year. He's going to play every day. He is going to be in the middle of that lineup. He's going to be batting right behind all the monsters ahead of him. So he'll have plenty of opportunity to drive in runs. Yeah, no, Teoscar is amazing. We love him, by the way. Just if people don't know that, Dodger fans absolutely love Teo. Teo loves the Dodgers. I think we very much want to see him succeed. And I think there's something to that as well in terms of helping a player, you know, really be at their best. So Teo's great.
Yeah, with all the money getting spent, I was actually surprised it took so long to bring him back. Is what I was like, why is this taking? But, you know, they got to do the business part of it, but it was just like,
I think there's a bit of a dance.
We all knew where he was signing. Come on, like, let's just do this.
Yeah. I will say with Teo, you know, again, it comes back to ceiling versus floor. Teo's great floor. I think he's exactly what floor. you're gonna get exactly what you expect of him. If you as a manager want to take someone with a higher ceiling in that range, I think that's a good range to do so. But if you want stability, like Tail's going to be a great option for that.
All right. So those first four are just like automatic. Just do the thing. Yeah. Enjoy the... Now it's like these are really good players, but there are questions now. Now we can actually discuss a few things. Max Muncy, it's been deteriorating for a few years. Like the power's kind of always been there. Last year we lost that. He got hurt also, so that's a grain of salt. But batting average has disappeared in recent years. Still great in OBP formats if that's what you're playing. So points leagues, you're good. But there's just been a lot of questions with his overall. He's getting older. He's going to be 34 this year. Muncy's ADP is 244. It's like the lowest it's ever been, pretty much. What are your thoughts on Max Muncy? Because I have actually passed him up everywhere.
At that price, at 244, you're still passing up on him?
Yeah, I guess just the way I'm building, I already have a third baseman. I don't really need to clog it up with a spec on Muncy. Like I said, I get the appeal because you don't get a lot of 30 home run options at that point in the draft. Like, they're there.
Right.
But just what else does he do to your team at the same time?
Yeah, 100%. Totally understood, and I get the concerns, especially since it's really like, you know, this is year three in a row now of really having question. I mean, his batting average last year was the high number since 2022 at 232, right? Like, that's not a good sign. You know, he did hit, you know, 15 home runs in 73 games. Like, you kind of extrapolate that out, and his power was roughly the same. His run production was roughly the same of what we've seen from him since, you know, let's just say since COVID year, right? Last 4 years, that's all stayed relatively the same. But there are some underlying concerns. And my biggest concern for Max Muncy and why I don't blame anyone for being out on him, he is getting worse against the fastball every year. He is going to be 34 years old this year. He's had repeated injuries, elbow injuries, and others that have really sapped, I think, you know, have had long-term effects. Once you start getting into, you know, age 34 season, there's some concerns. And here's just some quick numbers on his ability against the fastball in the last few years. His swinging strike rate has almost doubled on fastballs. In his peak, in his prime, he was basically swinging and missing about 5% of the time, 5-6% of the time. Last year, that was 11%. His contact, obviously, the flip side of this, his contact has also dropped from roughly mid-80s to now 73% last year. He's not swinging at fastballs out of the zone. His eye is still there, but he's just literally making contact on fastballs less. That to me says this is a guy who, and for as smart as he is from an approach perspective, this is not him getting fooled. This is him just not being the guy he's used to being when it comes to hitting fastballs. Can he make an adjustment? Maybe, but this is usually the first thing that we see. I believe we saw this happen with Matt Carpenter when Matt Carpenter really fell off, was he stopped being able to hit the fastball the way that he was before. Do we start seeing pitchers just really throw him that fastball more frequently, stop giving him off speed stuff to crush? That to me is the biggest concern. And if he doesn't fix that, if this isn't, you know, something that happened because he had an elbow injury and he's over that now and we're okay, you know, he could be really good value if that's the case. But if this is a batter getting older and getting their ability sapped from them through injuries, and pitchers finding ways to attack him in ways that they couldn't before, the floor could fall out from underneath him, which I picked 250 is not, no, you can live with the floor falling out. But yeah, I think to your point, it's how you build your team, right? If you want to bank on Muncy and leave that third base spot open, I don't think that's a good idea. But if you want to take a flyer on him and say, hey, we could see someone, you know, at pick 250 hit 30 home runs, bat 240, 250, you know, driving 90 runs.
Yep. And that's the catch, is can he figure it out? Can he do, like, stay healthy? Can he hit the fastball? Like, there's the platoon numbers have gotten a little worse in recent. Like, there's just so many little things which happens when you get older. That's just life. Mm-hmm. And so that's why he's again getting drafted where he's drafted. So that's why I was curious to get your thoughts on it. Like with all these shows, getting the fan or a fan's perspective and trying to keep. It's always a different angle. So I was curious on that.
I think Will it's Smith, real. I think the concerns are real with Muncy. Okay. I'll leave it there. I think they're real concerns. I think they're very much founded in reality, and I hope as a fan that he, you know, finds who he was back in, you know, 2019 or even 2021. But, you know, we're years removed from those years. So
for sure. All right. Let's talk Will Smith, catcher, big time fantasy guy. I have my personal feelings when it comes to Will Smith on fantasy. I don't draft him. But I know people that love him. It's an argument every year we have. I was actually concerned to start spring when he had the ankle injury, and the first report was he can only exercise on a non-gravity treadmill. And I'm like, that doesn't sound great. But now he's playing in Friday's game, so we're all good, apparently. So it's more just a thing. But what's your thoughts on Will Smith? ADP's 100. He's like the fifth or sixth catcher off the board in most drafts. Mm-hmm. He's a 20-ish to 25 homer guy. Like, we know who he is. Like, his stats are almost identical every single season. Is that something you're looking at ADP 100?
Personally, no. Okay. So first of all, I'm with you that Will Smith is who he is. You know, he's entering his age 30 season. I don't know why he's one of those guys that like always feels like he still is younger than he actually is and has potential. Yeah. This will be his, you know, fifth full season behind the dish for the Dodgers. And every year now, the last 4 years has been 20 home runs, you know, 140, 150 runs in RBI combined and a 250 batting average. And there's no reason to think any of that's going to change. I do find it odd. I'm kind of nitpicking. I do find it odd Wilson Contreras is going 14 picks higher than him.
That's the first base stuff. He'll get to play more. That's what everyone's banking on.
I forgot about that. Yeah. Yep.
It's like he'll play 140 games now. That's the theory behind that.
Yeah. I get it now. Yeah. I mean, just in general, Will Smith is who he is. I'm not going to personally draft him. Like I'm very much like a min max at catcher. If I'm not spending big on a catcher, and I don't personally see the need with the catchers that are on the board like this year. I don't see the need to spend big on a catcher. I'll wait. I'm happy to wait. If I'm in a two catcher NFBC league, Will Smith looks a lot more enticing, right? Give me one person that I can bank on. But if I'm in a one catcher league, yeah, I you know. What's the worst that's going to happen? I'm going to lose 10 home runs and 20 points of batting average, 30 points of batting average over the course of a season in, you know, potentially a head-to-head league where that stuff isn't even going to really make a difference. Like I'm not spending for Will Smith unless it's a two catcher league.
And that's a lot of it with Will Smith. Phenomenal floor. Like, we know who he is. It's like I've said with JTR for years. I'm like, I'm just not drafting him when I'm drafting him. I draft him this year because JTR's ADP is like 160 or something. I'm like, okay, that works. Mm-hmm. As Will Smith's ADP keeps dropping, one of these years I'm going to shock all my listeners and be like, yes, Will Smith's on the board for me this year, everybody. But I just like, what stat line he gives you? It's like, it's good, but it's just like, I don't know. There's a lot of that you can find is the way I feel. So
yeah, go find the guy that you like their 90th percentile outcome the most after pick. Whatever, 130, and go draft that guy, right? And if he doesn't hit his 90th percentile outcome, which happens, most people don't, that's fine. You play the waiver wire, you figure out catcher in a one catcher league, especially 12 team league. Yep. It's fine. You don't draft, you know, in the top 100 a catcher that is gonna be, you know, not a difference maker in the grand scheme of things, right? Yep. Especially the other players that are available on the board. You're asking me if I'm choosing between Roky Sasaki and Will Smith. I'm going to take Sasaki.
Yep. Totally with you on that. All right, let's go to Tommy Edman, who it was like a running joke on Bubba and the Bloom. It's like, is Tommy Edman alive? Because there's never all last season with the Cardinals. There's no like reports of him rehabbing. There's nothing. And all of a sudden the Dodgers trade for him. We're like, well, he's alive. That's a start. And then he finally comes back and, you know, plays 37 games, looked pretty good. Postseason was very good with Tommy Edman. They gave him a deal. An extension, a deal, whatever you want to call it. And he's back. Manning in center field, most likely, but he has the flexibility. ADP is 194. Mm-hmm. Where do you sit on Tommy Edman?
Yeah, I drafted Tommy Edman in way too many places last year. So I'm very familiar with the. I was about ready to call in a missing persons case.
Yes, that's kind of where we were. We're like, where is Tommy Edman?
Yeah. Like, there were no updates. And when I drafted him, I even knew I was like, I know I'm not getting him for the month of April, but like, he should be back. Early May, right? That's what the projections were. It was like 6 weeks until he was going to be back. And then we're in like mid-June and there's not even a single report. And I'm like, is he still with the club? Like, did St. Louis release this guy and no one said anything? Like, I was so confused. I like Tommy Edman. I don't know. I think drafting him in the top 200 is still too high. And the reason for that is like, he's really a one-tool player. Even in his best years, right? Like he was a 2.5 tool guy. If you counted 13 home runs as half a tool, maybe we'll say a 260 average and 13 home runs combined to be a half category there. Right. But he never drove in runs, never hit more than 13 home runs, never hit above 265 in a full season, which when you're talking about like a speedster, like that's something that you kind of want out of him. And then in St. Louis, he was scoring 90 runs a game. With the Dodgers, yes, it's a great offense. Yeah, he's going to be technically batting in front of like Otani and Betts and Freeman, but he's going to get much fewer plate appearances. He's going to be batting at the bottom of the order. 90 runs, I think, is a tall order. So to me, it's like, am I really going to draft the guy because I think he's going to get 20 steals and 70 runs scored and hit 260? Like I don't see the upside personally in that space. So I'm going to pass on Tommy Edman, unless for some reason, you know, we get a tip that, hey, they're going to let Edman run every single time he's on base and he's going to steal 50. He's going to go steal 60 bags just because he wants to show Shohei Ohtani that Korean people can run faster than Japanese people. Like, I don't see a world where Edman makes sense as a guy that I'm like drafting to be a part of my lineup. I think he's a streamer. I think he's someone that people will could be useful in an NFBC format where you need people on that are going to play every day and can play multiple positions. But 12 teamers, it just, I don't know. I don't see the upside personally.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at. Like in Arizona, I was pumping him up because his ADP was like 270. I'm like, yeah, let's do this. And then it's just skyrocketed, which was kind of expected, I guess. But
Playoff tax.
Well, it's a vanilla line. It's like there's just a lot of things with it. He's good, but probably better for the real life situation.
Yeah,
Michael Conforto.
Five outfielder league, 15 team league. You need people that play every day. He's gonna steal at least 15 bases given health. I get it, but for the vast majority of leagues, like he's not someone that you need to invest in. I would much rather draft someone that like could absolutely bomb in April and then I just replace them than draft someone who's going to play every day but be like kind of meh.
That's fair, definitely fair. Michael Conforto, I actually really like the signing for Conforto coming over to LA for two reasons. I feel like if they're going to pay him what they're paying him, he's going to play most of the time, which is a plus. We'll talk about who that hurts, which was a bummer later on, but Conforto's shown he's getting healthy. He's got the power still. ADP is 272, which is pretty sweet at that point. Where are you at on Michael Conforto?
First of all, I just want to say I loved Michael Conforto when he was coming up with the Mets. Like I thought he was going to be like a top 10 outfielder, top 15 outfielder for seasons to come. I thought he was fantastic. I am glad to see him sort of as a reclamation. Well, I'm not going to call him a reclamation project because I think he's had a couple of fine seasons in San Fran. But I think now we've seen multiple seasons in a row now of the Dodgers signing an outfielder who can hit to a short-term big money deal and say, hey, you have one job. You're just going to go out there and you're going to swing the bat. You're going to do your thing. You're going to hit for power. JD Martinez had a career year. Well, JD Martinez had a great year. He's had a great career. So I don't know if it was a career year with us, but he had a great year with us. Teo had a great year with us. I'd like to think one of the sort of assumptions that I make now as a Dodger fan with the front office that we have is if we're going out and getting a guy like this, they see something. There's something that they see that they believe, hey, we can make this tweak. We can tell him to change this in his approach or this in his swing, and it's going to have a positive impact. And obviously that doesn't happen. That's not, you know, we don't have some magic fairy dust that's going to make every player that joins us amazing. But you, typically speaking, when the Dodgers go out and say, we want this guy and we're going to make an investment in this guy, even if it's just 1 year, I think it means they see something. So I love Conforto as a player. I'm curious, you watched him 2 years in a row now. Like, is there more meat on the bone, do you think, with Conforto? Or do you think we're kind of at a stage now in his career where 240 and 20 home runs is you know, reasonable expectations?
I think that's kind of the expectations. The only boost I could give him is a better team, better ballpark. Might give him a little more in that area, but he's going to be good for at least one IL stint. That's just going to happen. It's just sad truth. But yeah. I think you are going to get – it's a floor of 240, 20 with maybe he gets to 25 and hits like 255 if things go right. So that's why at the ADP, I'm like, yeah, I'll take as a fifth outfielder or something. let's go. I'm interested, but yeah, he's not going to break the bank or anything like that.
Yeah. I mean, and going from one Dodger outfielder to another, like I would much, much rather draft Conforto than Edman, yes. Given their prices, because with Conforto, I can see a world where this is JD Martinez and Teoscar Hernandez 3.0, and he hits 30 home runs and hits 270. Like, it's not a realistic world, or it's not a likely world, I'll say, but I think there's upside there that we don't have with someone like Tommy Edman. So I'm, and maybe this is my Michael Conforto rose colored lenses from 2018 all over again, but I like him. I think he's going to play as close to every day. You know, obviously with him being a left-handed bat, he's going to get the good side of the platoon. You know, if the Dodgers do what they do with, we got guys like Páez and Chris Taylor and Kike, who are all right-handed bats that could easily, you know, see more time in the field at Conforto's expense. Could also see bats move to the outfield and, you know, on days like Miggy Rowe play shortstop. So I think Conforto is going to be sort of the short, the odd man out from time to time. But I want to believe in his abilities and I want to see it play out.
Yeah, I'm with you. And I want Páez to play, and we're going to have to wait. Looks like he's the fourth outfielder, but might get a chance. We'll see, because I'm just going to bring up Ha-Sung Kim, and I'm pretty sure that's how you pronounce it. Ryan has been teaching me that, listening to the broadcast. They said the Y is like silent or something. Okay. But now they're saying he might start in the minor leagues to get his swing more comfortable for this style of baseball. It makes a ton of sense. He's got options. Mm-hmm. A lot of these other guys don't. How do you kind of see the Kim thing with Páez and other options? Like, how do you see that kind of playing out right now?
Yeah. So the interesting thing is with Tommy Edman in center, that gives us the ability to bring him into the infield and gives a spot for Páez in center. But we also have Kike Hernandez. We also have Chris Taylor, who is, both of them are worse than Páez. I'm not going to, you know, there's no, as a hitter anyway. But the Dodgers are sort of the kind of team where, like, there's six people that you can write down in pen on any given day in the lineup. And then there's three spots that I think are going to be day to day matchups, you know, what's been happening this past week, who needs a day off, that sort of thing. And I think Páez is going to be part of that rotation. It's kind of like the Rays, but instead of doing it for all nine spots of their lineup, like, it's just like a few spots where there's going to be sort of a rotating cast of guys. I really like Páez. I hope Páez gets a extended run. I could easily see it being, though, if Kim isn't ready and they want Kim to be in the minors, that instead they would just play more Rojas, Taylor, and Kike in the infield rather than bring Edman in from center. But that's the thing, though, is it could go the other way just as easily, right? And they could prioritize the bat of Páez over the glove of Rojas or Hernandez. You know, they could prioritize having Edman in center and having that defense out there rather than moving him to second base. So it could go any which way. And I think Páez is definitely the next man up when it comes to the outfield. It just, the Dodgers love their flexibility and versatility, and you never know what next man up is actually going to mean for them.
Yeah. It's where it gets frustrating with the Dodgers. It's like the Charlie meme from Always Sunny, just like all over the walls, trying to figure it all out. It's not that easy. All right.
Luckily, at least it's just for our 7 through 9 spots. So we're not doing that for the whole lineup. It's like, we're getting, you know, and it's just sickos like you and me that are going to get like that over Andy Páez and Ha-Sung Kim. And by the way, if we're going to talk about Ha-Sung Kim, I'll just say, don't draft him in any of your leagues, regardless of whether he is a starter or not. Yeah. I don't think he's going to be fantasy relevant this season, period.
100% agree on that for sure. All right, let's head to the mound now. And there's some questions because you have so many of them. They all have injury histories, so pick your poisons. But Yoshinobu Yamamoto, we were very excited for last year, had the injury bug hit him. Postseason came back, looks pretty darn good. He's going to start, I believe, game one in Japan in a couple of weeks. And if you like Yamamoto, you have to pay a price because his ADP is 60 right now. Where do you stand on Yoshinobu Yamamoto?
Yeah, I think we saw a fantastic first season from Yamamoto, you know, with everything that we expected from him last year. And I think he's going to build on that. I think we've got, and Eric Samulski brought up this point on the On the Corner podcast, plug Pitcherless On the Corner, that there is a history, and I think he wrote an article on this too, there is a history of international pitchers performing better in year two than in year one. You know, they're getting more accustomed to the lifestyle, getting more accustomed to the schedule, getting obviously more accustomed to the batters that they're facing. I think Yamamoto has a great foundation. I am concerned that we saw the fastball get pummeled a bit in the playoffs, and and I am a little bit concerned about that. I like him overall as a pitcher. I think he's a fantastic starter. I think the Dodgers as a whole are going to be a sort of a thought experiment in value per inning pitched versus raw actual volume value. Because I think the Dodgers as a whole are going to look better on a per inning pitch model than on a, like at the end of the year, the, what the actual volume says that their ranking is. So I really think, you know, when you're talking about the guys that are going around him, it's Gerrit Cole, it's Michael King, Framber Valdez, Pablo Lopez, like all of these guys you can pencil, if not pen in for 180 plus and close to 200 for most of these guys. So that to me is a question of, do you want to take 150 innings from Yamamoto over the people around him? I probably wouldn't. I probably would opt for those other pitchers around him who I feel more confident that I'll get six straight months of their availability on the mound. But if you're a more active manager, more tinkery kind of manager, more willing to play the IL game and the, you know, let's play the waiver wire for starting pitchers, than a guy like Yamamoto, who's going to be fantastic on a lower volume, could be the right pitcher for you.
Yeah, you nailed where I'm standing right now in my kind of formats. I'm just not drafting him this year, unfortunately, because I just can't deal with that those questions. Basically,
there's a certain amount of pitchers you can have on your roster that you can have these questions about, and there's a certain price that you're willing to pay, and every listener is going to have different answers to those two questions, right? Like 100%. How many pitchers you're willing to have on your roster that you're playing these games with, and how high of a price you're willing to pay for that kind of guy. So this is a risk management question that you have to answer for yourself. And I'm personally very risk averse when it comes to starting pitching. Part of that is because most of the leagues I play in, I play against really, really smart people, and finding pitching on the waiver wire is impossible. So I can't play that game, but other people can. And for people who can play that game, you can draft Yamamoto and make it really work for you, because he is going to be a really, really good. I'm looking at our PLV powered projections. On a per inning pitched model, he is projected to be the 14th best starting pitcher. And for the record, Shohei Ohtani is one above him, and we all know Ohtani's not going to touch anywhere near the volume that someone like Yamamoto is. So Yamamoto really is like a top 15 starter on a per inning pitch basis. So it makes that 60th pick price point look a lot more feasible.
Yeah, it just depends on how many innings do you think he throws. That's going to be a trend if they got so many options. If they do go six man or whatever they're going to do, we'll see. But Roki Sasaki, the new acquisition this year, coming over from Japan for the Dodgers, going to start game two in the Japan series. We know how good this young kid is. There are some stories that he didn't have surgery, so people are skeptical on that. People are just trying to find their arguments, basically. You either love him or you hate him, it feels like right now. ADP is 100. I'm just in the camp, like, I want to see him do it here for a year before I pay for it. But I'm excited to see what it is. I'll say that much. So what are your thoughts on Roki Sasaki?
Yeah, I think a lot of the concerns that are out there about him are people looking for reasons to be concerned. Because, I mean, you know, it is scary, right? This is a guy, you know, you can easily look at it and say, oh, he has a minor league contract, and therefore the Dodgers could send him down. It's like there's no world in which Sasaki signs with the Dodgers if he thinks there's any chance they're not going to have him in their rotation for the full season. No, he should have gotten Tommy John surgery a couple of years ago. I mean, at that point, why come to MLB now and sign for less money when he could have just gotten Tommy John surgery and, you know, been able to be posted in a couple of years and get a full contract from a major league team? So I think there's a lot of people grasping at whatever they can grasp at, because we're not really sure what we're going to get from him. And I think that part is fair. I think this is a very similar situation to Yamamoto, a great pitcher who has questions about his fastball, who has questions about his workload. And you can once again easily look at it and say, this is not a risk that I'm willing to take. But I'll say for me, I'm not personally interested in drafting Yamamoto 60th overall. But as I kind of teased earlier, I am interested in drafting Roki Sasaki 100th overall. I think that's a perfect space in the draft to kind of take a chance at starting pitcher. By that point in the draft, I should have two starting pitchers on my roster, the way that I like to construct my teams. And so at that point, I would feel comfortable taking a risk like Sasaki and having a chance to have a top 10 starting pitcher drafted at 100th overall. So on a per inning, again, per inning basis, with all the Dodger pitchers, you kind of have to pencil them in for no more than like 160 innings.
Yep.
With maybe one exception. So
that's the kicker. Yep.
Yeah. And I think, and again, you said that's going to be the situation for every Dodger starter, is you kind of have to answer that question for yourself first of volume and risk management before you can even evaluate any of these pitchers on an individual basis.
100%. All right, another new acquisition, Blake Snell, who I had the pleasure to watch last year, especially in the second half, just dominate all of baseball. But if you're a believer in Snell, you got to pay an ADP of 45 for him. Snell has only thrown over 150 innings twice in his career. Won the Cy Young both times, but those are only two times. When you know how good Snell is, for crying out loud, Nick Pollock has a plot of Blake Snell. But where are you on Blake? Because I love Blake Snell. I'm not opposed to ADP 45. It's not a target for me, though, at ADP 45.
Yeah, and this is the guy that when I just said there's one pitcher, can't pencil him in for 180, but this is the only pitcher that, like, if you gave me $100 to place a bet on any Dodger pitcher over under 179 and a half innings pitched, Snell's the guy that I'll put that money on. He was so good the second half of last year, or you know, after he got over the initial hump. And again, he signed late in spring training last year. And we've seen in the past that is a legitimate obstacle for pitchers to overcome when they signed late. I can't think of very many starting pitchers who signed late and were as good as they normally are. And for Snell to have the run that he went on just goes to show how talented of a pitcher he is. So yes, I'm all in on Blake Snell. I think he's going to get as much work out of anyone that the Dodgers have. You know, you look at the guys going around him, and I mean, I'm not drafting Jacob DeGrom over Blake Snell.
No, that's true.
That's a landmine. You know, but Dylan Cease, George Kirby, Cole Reagans, you know, these are the kind of guys that are going in that same range. And I don't know, maybe I'd probably take Kirby over Snell, and that might be it. Maybe I would take Reagans. I don't think I'm allowed to say that I would take anyone over Reagans and still work at pitcher list, but there are concerns. Yeah, I like Blake Snell. I like him at his price. I think he's gonna be a great, great addition to the Dodgers staff. Thank you very much for giving us Snell and Conforto. They're gonna be great additions to our 2025 World Championship run.
And the show, sorry, connection's breaking up here.
I think that just we have the usual questions about Blake Snell about, you know, does he have those extended periods of time where he just doesn't have his stuff? Can he pitch 180 innings? But of all the Dodger pitchers, I think he's the one with the fewest number of question marks, that might be the first time that has ever been said about Blake Snell in the rotation that he's in.
I'm with you. And like, that's why I like him. I'm not like I'm just not targeting him there, but if like he somehow fell like 10, 15 picks in a draft, I'd be ecstatic to draft Blake Snell. So definitely a guy I don't mind. And I agree, out of all the pitchers that I could say, I'd be willing to even say over 150 because I'm kind of skeptical on some of these guys, but 180 for sure. One guy that I'm skeptical of 150 because we've never seen it before is Tyler Glasnow. Guy's great. Mm-hmm. IVR issue basically shut his season down. Didn't get it fixed, so I'm terrified of this whole situation. He's admitted he throws and doesn't care about ruining his arms. That's how he gets paid. So that's like not a great feeling, honestly. But when he's out there and he's healthy, he's awesome. ADP's 90. I just can't draft him, unfortunately.
Tyler Glasnow has to be like the baseball epitome of like the bad boyfriend that's like, no, but I can fix him. Yeah. But no, but it's fine. And here's why. Because he's really good. And honestly, he's really good looking. But from a baseball perspective, again, this comes back to, this is the exact same question with Roku Sasaki, with Yoshinobu Yamamoto. How many innings are you going to get? How much are the Dodgers going to, mess with his workload? You know, the six starter rotation that they're definitely going to implement when Ohtani comes back. The only reason that rotation doesn't get implemented is because multiple pitchers get injured, which this is the Dodgers and this is 2025. And those are both, you know, real possibilities. I don't think there's any doubt that on a per inning basis, Glasnow is one of the best pitchers in baseball. We actually have him ranked sixth among all starting pitchers on a per inning pitch basis. Our projection rankings take into account all the five categories: wins, you know, strikeouts, ERA, WHIP. So it's one of those things where, like, you're not going to get a better pitcher on a per inning basis, but you're going to get 100 mornings pitched from some of the guys around Glasnow. So yep. I think we're at a point in the draft where Glasnow is going, where, you know, now kind of how your staff is shaking out a little bit, you know, the risks you've already taken in your first, you know, five picks, six picks, seven picks, depending on how deep your league is. So you'll know, you know, what your risk tolerance is going to be on this team. And I never thought I would say risk tolerance and risk management, risk mitigation, as much as I have ever. Oh, wow. And this Dodgers team is just making me into a financial analyst or something. Like, it all comes down to your risk tolerance. And
you're going to need to with all the deferrals. So yes,
I'd rather take, in this same range, I'd rather take Roki Sasaki. I think there's less concerns about his workload than Tyler Glasnow. And I think the talent level is close enough. I don't see myself drafting Glasnow in a lot of leagues. I'll just leave it there.
Yeah, I'm with you. It sucks. Talent, probably one of the most talented pitchers on the entire staff. Just can't.
He's untouchable when he's on. It's absolutely unreal to watch. And it was really a stark contrast watching Glasnow pitch last season, and then, like, having our aces be Yamamoto and Flaherty in the playoffs. Two really, really good pitchers, but they had starts where they just didn't have it, and that didn't happen for Glasnow. When Glasnow was on the mound, he was dominant. It's just when he was on the mound, and that's not often enough, as far as I'm concerned.
All right, I'm going to put these two together, just because if they do go six-man, Dustin May and Tony Gonsolin are both in the rotation. If they don't, yep, one goes to the bullpen, because Dustin May is out of options. So we know that's taking place there. So when you look at Gonsolin's ADP, is 333. Dustin May, people still like, but his ADP is not showing. He's 350, basically. Are you interested in taking darts on either one of these guys?
Yeah, I'm much more interested in taking a dart on Dustin May. Obviously Gonsolin has performed at a high level. He's had some really fantastic seasons, and he's, you know, he went 16-1 one year with a 2.14 ERA. Like, great. He's really good. But I think there was a lot more, like, when you look at it from an underlying metric perspective, when you look at it from, like, the skills perspective, I think Dustin May is undoubtedly a better pitcher. And so for me, if I'm drafting today and I'm at pick 350 and they're both on the board, I'll take Dustin May. But I do think we're going to get a lot of information over these next few weeks that are going to change both of their draft values drastically. I would strongly recommend people try to stay ahead of those trends. Obviously you can't control when your draft is. But I would do whatever I could to try to draft Dustin May, you know, at the price you're drafting, Matt. If I draft Dustin May today at pick 350 and I'm wrong, and
you can drop him so easily,
a big whoopty freaking do, right? No, it doesn't hurt me at all. What did I miss out on? You know, but as we get more information, there is a price that I won't pay. I don't think I'd go into like above pick 200 if I knew these guys had the job, because I wouldn't, even if they come out and say Dustin May is our number five starter. Okay, for how long? At what point are we going to like start messing around with that stuff? So there's a price I won't pay. There's a point in the draft where it's like there's just no return there, and I'm not going to make that pick. And you know, if Dustin May starts getting picked in the like late hundreds, you know, around the same range as like a Seth Lugo and a Sean Manaea and these other guys that like I know are getting the work this year, I'm not going to make that call.
I'll ask real briefly, do we need to talk about Bobby Miller?
We do need to talk about Bobby Miller. Okay. And the reason being, he had a shoulder injury last year. Right shoulder inflammation. That's his throwing arm. Everything about why he sucked last year looks like a guy who lost what made him good, right? Like from an input perspective, I can't put that into like specific. I mean, yes, I can point that into his fastball lost a mile and a half. His location wasn't very good. Batters were making way better contact. But I think all of it comes back to this is a young pitcher who had different inputs from his body that didn't allow him to be at his best. And then the confidence went out the window. I think Bobby Miller is someone that will get a shot again this year. I don't think you need to draft. Let me rephrase that. Don't draft Bobby Miller.
Yeah, there. But that's what I was talking
about. But put him on that watch list. Put him on that watch list. And when he gets called up and gets a start, I might even look at my team and be like, do I want to spec at him ahead of time? Because if he goes out and he's awesome, that's someone that is going to cost a lot of fab. Like a lot of fab if he is awesome in his first start. Because people are going to look at 2023 and people are going to start salivating again. So he's someone, again, kind of to Dustin, the same thing I said about Dustin May. I like them when they're free. And I don't know what price they're going to jump to once we start getting better information on them from the Dodgers. So keep a very close eye on Bobby Miller, because if I believe in the pitcher that we saw in 2023. And I just think he had situations outside of his control that did not allow him to be at that level in 24.
All right, let's head to the bullpen here. You got two new guys headlining it. Tanner Scott, Kirby Yates. Dave Roberts said Tanner Scott's the primary guy. I don't trust David Roberts very much.
No.
So I don't trust him at all, honestly.
No.
So where do you kind of see this shaking out?
I don't want to draft a Dodgers reliever. It's funny. I saw something recently, like the Dodgers – since the year 2010, like, have had only two relievers who've gotten more than 40 saves for the club. And it was Kenley Jansen and Evan Phillips, and everyone else was like under 30 saves, something like that. Like they're just not a team that is going to, give that job to someone and just have them stick with it after Kenley Jansen. There are too many people in that bullpen. And there are too many people who have had closer experience for me to feel any way good about Tanner Scott being someone that is just going to have the job no matter what. Obviously him being the best lefty in the bullpen helps, but us having Yates, Trinan, and Kopech, who are all fantastic and right-handed, means there are going to be games where Scott is available and just doesn't pitch because the matchups don't call for it. And it means that if Scott has any kind of hiccup, we've got three guys right there who all have proven that they can close games. I mean, Kopech did it for the White Sox, so who knows if that counts for anything. But he pitched in high leverage situations in the playoffs last year. I trust him. Evan Phillips might pitch again this year. I don't know. I don't really know what's going to happen there. But there's just too many people in that bullpen. And Dave Roberts and Andrew Friedman and the Dodgers organization are too analytically driven for them to just say, all right, Tanner Scott's the guy, and we're never going to have this conversation again. Like, that conversation will be had throughout the season. The only flip side of it is that you, me, and everyone else has this exact same thought, right? Mm-hmm. Like, what's Tanner Scott's ADP right now? It's pretty low. He's being drafted behind Alexis Diaz. And I hate that on NFBC I can't start by starting pitcher and relief pitcher, but he's not being drafted the way. If Tanner Scott gets 35 saves, he's at the same level of value as Emmanuel Clase and Devin Williams and Josh Hader, right? Like that's the kind of guy you're getting if he gets 35 saves, and no one's drafting him like that because no one thinks he's going to get 35 saves. If you want to make a bet on a closer providing you a ton of extra value, Tanner Scott at a low price point is a good bet, because we're not betting against skills. We're betting against the Dodgers giving him enough chances. And that could easily be proven wrong, because we don't trust Dave Roberts, and maybe he is telling the truth this time. Who knows? You know, he's
getting old and turned over a new leaf, but yeah, cause like, I agree, the skills, I love Tanner Scott. I love him more than Kirby Yates. Like, that should be the dude, but I just don't, again, trust Dave Roberts.
Yeah, if this ADP that I'm seeing on NFBC is like accurate, and Tanner Scott is being drafted roughly around pick 170 and 64th overall.
I got him 107 right now.
Okay. That's different.
Kirby that's Yates way different. Kirby Yates is 217.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Yates is someone that might, like, if you're one of those people that you draft setup men because you want to make that, you know, sort of speculation bet, you know, speculative bet, go for it. I like that. I like that call a lot, because Kirby Yates is a guy who could get 25 saves and be a great value there. Yeah. If Scott slips far enough that you look at it and you're like, I could literally get a top five closer for the price of a, you know, the 15th closer off the board, go for it. But if he's at pick 100, 110, that's
tough.
I'm good. That's someone else's problem.
Yep. All right. Two more questions for you here. I don't know where they play because there's nowhere for them to play, but any prospects worth looking forward to seeing potentially as a fantasy impact for 2025? Again, not sure where they physically play, and Sasaki doesn't count.
No. I would never. Yeah. There's only, you know, it's funny. There's two prospect lists out there. The ones that have Roki Sasaki at number one, and the ones that go, Roki clearly doesn't count. Why are we even doing this? This is a dumb exercise. There's one prospect that, and when I say keep an eye on, I don't even mean there's no investment. Please don't put any investment into Dalton Rushing, but he is the only one who has a legitimate path to playing time and has a, and unfortunately, when I say legitimate path to playing time, I mean, if Will Smith gets hurt,
exactly,
the Dodgers are not going to go out there with Austin Barnes and Hunter Fiducia as their two catchers on a regular basis. They're going to give Dalton Rushing a chance. He is the only one who's even remotely close enough to the majors to be an impact player in 2025. And he's the only one who has, if you squint, a path to playing time. That's it. So don't, I know Zaire Hope, you know, the trade was, you know, oh, we got Zaire Hope. Like, he looks amazing. He ain't playing in the majors this year.
Where's he playing? Like,
yeah,
if he's playing in the majors, a lot of things went wrong.
I was going to say, you need, for everyone else, there's multiple injuries that need to occur. Multiple injuries are just like straight up Space Jam, Monstar, stealing your talent levels of like falling apart that need to occur ahead of these guys. Dalton Rushing is the only one where I'm looking at this and I'm like, you know, knocking on wood, Will Smith misses 2 months. The Dodgers are not going to be with Austin Barnes and Hunter Fiducia for more than a week before they're like, this ain't working. Like, we need to bring someone else up here.
For sure. And I like the rushing call. I wrote about that in the Black Book this year. I said, like him, they're not going to stash him on the bench. He has to have a role, which means Will Smith has to get hurt.
Yeah, that's it. That's the only way.
All right. Realistic expectations for 2025. And sadly, your realistic expectations are probably pretty close to accurate.
Repeat.
Yeah. I always say realistic because, like, every fan's like, yeah, I want to win the World Series, but I'm like, the Dodgers actually have a path to win the World Series.
Yeah, I mean for me, understanding how the playoffs work, I'm just gonna say the same thing I always say about the Dodgers. Just be there in October, give yourself that chance. It's funny that the NFL is seen as like the any given Sunday sport, but like baseball really, especially when you get to the playoffs, it really is like any, just get in and anything can happen. Let's get to October. Let's get to October healthy. Let's get to October healthy with clear and defined roles for pitchers and stuff like that. I don't want them still with a 6-man rotation in October. There's some questions there that the Dodgers are going to have to answer. And most likely the answer is Glasnow's hurt and, you know, Otani is just going to be a hitter or something, you know, by the time we get to October. But that to me is just, let's just get there. And that's realistic. And for half of the Dodgers roster to be fantasy relevant, which is also realistic. So yeah, this is an easy podcast for you, isn't it?
Oh, easy is the right word, but yeah, no, I'm just kidding. Yeah, no, it is. Cause the Dodgers are just very, very good. Very, very good. It's like the Braves and a couple other ones that are just easy.
What do you think? I'm curious. Cause obviously I know you always ask the fan and you always, you know, you're the facilitator in this conversation, but what do you see? Like what, obviously, I'm not going to make you say you think the Dodgers are going to win the World Series. As a Giant fan, I would not put that on you. But from a fantasy perspective, is there anyone that you're keeping a close eye on with the Dodgers? Of like, this guy really could pop, and I think this is my secret ticket.
Well, Andy Paz is a guy I've always loved, but I don't know where he's going to play. So like, that's insanely tilting. Like, I had so many shares of him because I knew they'd bring Teoscar back. The Conforto screwed it all up. That ruined that dream. who am I looking at this year to kind of take the next step, I guess, in theory? That's a great question. I would go on the mound. I it's not like a secret, but I think I am interested in Blake Snell with the Dodgers. Like, how does that work? But I'm only interested if it becomes a five-man rotation, because just that limits the inning so much. Like, it's great for real-life baseball, but for fantasy, it limits so many things. So I would say Blake Snell, I guess, if you want something like a little deeper of it. I am curious what Conforto could do on a team like this. I really am. Because I think, like I said, the floor is good. I think there's more to him. Like, he's shown solid skills, but between ballpark change and team context should help him a ton. So,
yeah.
Interested in that.
Yeah, I think I'll just say last two thoughts on the two players you just mentioned. Páez and Snell. I don't think Páez is going to be completely, like, left out. I mean, he's not going to be an everyday player, which obviously is what you were hoping for. But, again, like, sort of like with Dalton Rushing, it was a very, very easy, like, opportunity there for Páez to be a regular player. And he's got power. He's fantastic. And then with Snell and the six-man rotation, it's not even a six-man rotation right now, because Otani's not coming back till May at the earliest. And number two, we have so many days off in April.
That's true. I heard like the third week in April or something. Yeah.
So we do not play on a Thursday in April. We have two extra random days off between series.
MLB's just cooking the books for the Dodgers. Look at this. I'm just
kidding. There's really, I mean, you can look at April and see, like, maybe two situations in which a sixth starter would even make any kind of sense in the entire month of April. I just think that by the time we get to, you know, we get to a more legitimate schedule in the month of May, and we have Otani theoretically on the mound at that point, there's no guarantee that we have six healthy starters, right?
Oh, I'm fully on board with, because there's a lot of concerns in this rotation. I've been saying that from day one. Great pitchers, a lot of questions.
Yeah, there's no guarantee. So you can, you know, I think it's fair to ding someone like Blake Snell on the speculation that there's going to be a six-man rotation that you know, limits his starts. But I don't – this is not going to be something that lasts all year, and this isn't going to be something that could even happen by the time we get to the point where we want a six-man rotation. So I don't know. I'm more willing to take a chance on that, on Blake Snell in that capacity, because I think he'd be the one guy that the Dodgers would put that every fifth day. Like, of any starter they have, they put that on him first. But yeah. And then, you know, Clayton Kershaw is going to come back at some point this year, and it'll be a seven-man rotation, and it'll be great
for those 40 innings.
I just need what, 21 strikeouts? Is that what we're, how many were short? 19 strikeouts? Like, that's all I need.
Like that. Yeah. That's what he's coming for.
That's all that matters. I don't care what else happens. 32 strikeouts is all that we need. And then he can ride off into the sunset, enjoy his dad bod, enjoy drinking beer out of the World Series trophy. We'll just, you know, let him do his thing, but let's get him those 32 strikeouts. That's all that matters.
Yeah. I'm with you there. You guys have a great option. Like, you didn't want me to pick, but they are the favorites, and I agree with the favorite part about winning the World Series. We'll see it, because that is – you said, and I said it on the D-back show, that was the show before this, is that the beautiful thing about baseball is a great loaded team gets you to the dance a lot easier. But in the dance, a lot changes. A lot changes every game. So that's the beauty of the game. So it's not automatic for the Dodgers. They just have the extra oomph right now.
Yeah.
All right, before we head out of here, remind everybody where they can find you and what's going on in the world of Pitcher List.
You can find me on Twitter at Miles Nelson PL. I'm also technically on Blue Sky. I don't know. I'm going to sound boomerish for a minute here. I don't know who Blue Sky is. I don't know what that is. I have an account. Don't know how to use it, but I'm on there. I'll figure it out eventually. But the main thing is, if you want to find me, just do me the favor and find Pitcher List, right? Find the resources that we have, find all the great stuff that we bring to the table. A lot of the analysis that I just brought to the table now was powered by our projections, powered by PLV, and stuff straight from our player pages. So I hope that, you know, y'all come check out Pitcher List, see everything that we've got cooking over here, and hopefully help, you know, you see how it can help you in draft season and your in-season management. You know, so thank you all so much for always supporting the site, and Bubba, you know, a friend of the site, a fantastic person to always have around, a genuinely 80 grade hang at all times. So I really appreciate you, man. Always appreciate you having me on.
Yep, always great chatting with you. We'll have to chat sometime before Arizona this time around, but you're a busy man, so we'll figure it out. But everybody, check out Pitcher List, of course. Amazing stuff over there between the tools, the articles, the podcasts, you name it. They're doing it all. Nick's always streaming or somebody's doing something. So go check it out. And until next time, this was Bench with Bubba, episode 747. Catch y'all later.